And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 810, continuing our team-by-team previews to get you ready for the 2026 fantasy baseball season. We're in the AL Central. We're heading to Kansas City to talk to Kansas City Royals. In order to do so, good friend of mine, good friend of the show, you can find his work over on the Wire podcast over at pitcherlist.com and on Blue Sky at Chasing Wins. Kevin Hastings, how we doing, my friend?
Oh, amazing, Bubba. As I was just telling you off air, it's always amazing to talk baseball with you. Glad that we can catch up. And it's also always great because I know you probably go through this with your Giants. It's sometimes I feel like I may be talking a little too much Royals, but that's the point of today. So it's even better.
Yep. That's the point of the day. Every team has a special person come on the show for me that loves their team. That's the beauty of it. So before we get into that, I mentioned the On the Wire podcast. Let the people know what you got going on.
Yeah, co-host On the Wire at Pitcher List Podcast Network with Adam Howe, who is amazing, keeps me in check. He kind of is in your role. He's it's almost like he's interviewing me each episode, so it makes my job easy and a little difficult for him, but he's awesome. And we're doing our off-season episodes as you are, and then in season we do our it's fab based. We're based on fab each week, like you and Ryan do on Thursday nights, Bubba and the Bloom. And ours comes out, we try to record it as late as possible, typically Friday night, Saturday night if we can, so it's most up to date for people when it's released Sunday morning, just before we're working on our fab for Sunday.
Yeah, no, it's a great listen. I know Ryan and I talk about it off the air and on the air about your guys' show. It's a good one. It's one of the few that is as, I guess, late to the party as possible to keep us up to date for what's going on. So I can't do it in my world, but you guys can do it, and we appreciate you doing it. So
it's kind of funny. When we first started, that was a requirement from Nick. We couldn't record until Saturday night. We have gotten away from that at times just due to our schedules, but we still try to do it that way.
Yeah, Nick needs to be a little more flexible. I'm just kidding. I love Nick. We all love Nick.
But, absolutely.
He's a married man now, so he's going to forget about all kinds of things.
Right? Exactly.
So watch out. All right, let's talk Kansas City Royals. This is a good one here. You've actually got my eyes open on each of the last couple of years on a few different players here and there. And that's the beauty of this. But before we talk individual players, how do you think 2025 went as a Royals fan?
As far as a Royals fan playing fantasy baseball, as had been the case for a couple previous seasons, the top half of the lineup were amazing players to have in our fantasy lineups. However, the bottom, not so great. And that does affect the top of the lineup as well. Once again, the Royals were bottom five in runs scored. That hurts even those top guys that we do like as well. That leads to the less runs, less plate appearances. They're bottom of the league, towards the bottom of the league in plate appearances as well. So that is still my concern. They have done a few things in the offseason that do seem to improve the bottom half of that lineup. Improvement from other guys that we'll talk about, like Jack Caglianone, that can help a lot as well. But that is my concern. As a team, they haven't scored a lot of runs, even as good as the top half of the lineup has been.
Yeah, no, that's a trend doing the AL Central, especially. That has been a trend where the top halves of most of these teams are actually pretty good. You get down, like I did the Guardians that came out yesterday, and whew, the bottom half of that lineup, ugly. Let's just say the Royals looking a lot better when we go that direction.
I'm looking at runs scored in 2025 right now, and three of the bottom five teams in the league are AL Central.
Yep, it is a trend, and that's why it's always up for grabs every single year. So let's talk players here, and we'll start with the easy one, Bobby Witt Jr., that even on a quote-unquote down season, hit 23 home runs, stole 38 bases, so 30-plus steals in all four seasons, hit 295, still a really, really, really good season. We just have high standards for Bobby Witt Jr. Right now he's at an ADP of 3 over the last 10 or so DCs. What are we thinking on Witt? Because I guess what it comes down to is, do you believe he's got the 30 home run power you saw the previous two seasons, or is he more of a mid-20s guy with still almost 40 steals?
You know, I With the Bat and Bat X coming out recently, they have the Bat has him for 26 home runs. The Bat X that includes more StatCast data has him at 30. I think we're in that range, right? Upper 20s, maybe not quite getting to the 30 that he did in 2023 and 2024. It's really hard as a Royals fan and hearing other Royals fans talk. It was a down year. It was an 8-WAR player, but you know it wasn't the 10.5 we saw in 2024. More stolen bases than he had had in 2024. Not to the point he got in 2023. I think there's a wide range of outcomes here. I do like the projections of approaching 30 home runs, having over 30 stolen bases again. I have taken him second in a draft. I did take him ahead of Aaron Judge when Otani went first. I've also taken Aaron Judge ahead of Bobby Witt Jr. It's just on how you want to start the construction of your team. I know you and Ryan talk about this quite a bit. Yes, there are a lot of really good shortstops, but they go quickly. So I do think there are builds where I would rather have him than the power hitting outfielder to start my team. And so I can see him going anywhere in that range. I don't think I would take him much later than about fourth. I think I bump Juan Soto up a little higher than some people do. Juan Soto's in that conversation for the top three or four picks for me. But yeah, Bobby Witt Jr., great way to start your draft. I think you can count on 25 plus home runs, 30 plus stolen bases, great batting average, runs and RBIs.
Yeah, it's a phenomenal floor, what he brings to the table. Yes. with the ceiling, like you've mentioned. And it is an interesting discussion because it seems like Otani and Judge are the clear 1-2 for most. That's just kind of the dichotomy we're in. But then I'm like, the discussion between Soto, Witt, and J-Ram is very interesting to me. Like, it's very much, I guess, pick your poison. How do you want to start your draft? Like, do you want a 40 steal guy at third base, which doesn't exist anywhere else? Do you believe in Soto's going to steal? Because if you do, that's outstanding. Like, there's so many levels to it that I don't think you could go wrong, but time will tell on all three. But the 3 through 5 is going to be a lot of moving and shaking, I think, come draft season.
Yeah, and if you say there's so many shortstops, 6 of them go in the first 2 rounds right now. So they go quickly.
Yeah, by the time it comes back to you, you're lucky if Trey Turner's sitting there. Right. Like, you're lucky. So it's like that's the drop-off that Kevin's talking about at the position. All right, let's head to the big Sasquatch himself, Vinny P, who I absolutely loved last year. I love this year, but right now you got to pay a price. ADP is 94, which is still not bad, but it's definitely a massive upgrade from last season, where he hit 264 with 32 home runs and 113 RBIs, Kevin. Second half was absolutely glorious for Vinny P. What are your thoughts on this year? Because now, like I said, you got to pay the toll to get Vinny P, but I think it might still be worth it.
Yeah. So with Vinny P, this is really interesting to me. I think the pick is worth it, going about pick 90 over the past 3 or 4 weeks in DCs. That's the 10th first baseman eligible player off the board, really 9th with Ben Rice up ahead of him. Worthy of the spot, but Adam and I have talked about this quite a bit this offseason. There's a lot of similar stats available at first base later. And so while I do think he is worthy of this spot, 30 home run, 100 RBI, I think that is the expectation. You know, you got Soderstrom, Michael Busch, some of these guys, even later, Christian Walker, Wilson Contreras, Torque, all going much later. I try to wait on first base. Derek Carty has been, he's been shouting this from the rooftops for years. Don't draft a first baseman early. A couple of my drafts, when I have an early pick and Vlad's still waiting there in the second round, I've taken him. I just can't let him go any further, but I try to wait on first base. And last year that made Vinny Pasquantino be a part of this conversation. This year, I think I can wait a little longer, but I think the stats you'll get from him are worthy of that spot. I can just get him later and look for another position there.
No, it's a great point. We've talked about that on Bubba and the Bloom, that like, I love Vladdy and Pete Alonso. Love those two profiles. then it starts getting to a lot of similar profiles as you go down the board to your point. And then it kind of takes a break and it goes to another group of similar profiles in the drafters. I guess it's the nature of the beast. Like, how do you want to build your team? And first base might give you the luxury. Like, same with second base. We say it's a bad position, but if you just don't take like the three elite second basemen or whatever, they're all a lot the same, and they're all going around like pick 200 and beyond. So it's just kind of like, how do you want to build things is what it comes down to. So to your point, yeah, Vinny P, really good floor. If you want a similar profile with upside, you can probably find that, like that Christian Walker tier you were mentioning, pretty easily. Let's talk the ageless wonder. It feels like he's going to be 36 years old this year, which is crazy. And that's Salvador Perez. Salvi just continues to rake 30 home runs last year, another 100 RBI season, hit 236. The average took a hit, but still 155 games, Kevin. It's like, when is it going to stop? Who knows? But he keeps beasting out, keeps getting the job done. ADP is just around 100, give or take, right now. So that's kind of a bummer. But where are you at on Salvi? Because I love the profile. I'm just terrified because, yes, I'm being an ageist. I am terrified that eventually Father Time will win here.
Yeah, especially the workload he's had throughout his entire career. And it seems like he's been around for 20 years. It's surprising to me he's only 36 years old. It seems like he's been around forever. But he's going to get the plate appearances. And the times he's missed time throughout his career has been fluke injuries. In spite of the heavy workload, he has been extremely durable behind the plate. So he's going to get the plate appearances. I know you're all about the catchers, and the thing with him, I want two catchers that are going to give me 500 plus plate appearances. We know we're getting that from Salvador Perez. He's the eighth catcher off the board right now. The Bad X projections have him as the third catcher available, and he's 20 cents behind Hunter Goodman for number two. So I think this is a great spot and a great value for Salvador Perez. If you're snatching an early catcher there, being projected to be the second or third catcher in 2026, and you can draft him as the eighth.
Yeah, and that's where it's very enticing. Like, if you believe he is, you know, if you're not worried about the age, if you're good there, we're going to get to the reason why I still think he plays a ton in a little bit. Like, there's a catcher that I think plays a ton and I'm a humongous fan of. So that'll leave DH available for the time being. Now, a lot can change throughout a season. But if you're a believer that he's still getting 140-plus, 150-plus games, the ADP of 100 is still pretty darn good if you want an early catcher, to your point. Like, that's really, really good. Now, it just depends if that's what you want. It's not everybody's cup of tea. I don't mind it. But, there's a lot of good catchers out there these days. So I get if people don't want to go early. There's a ton of catchers going before him that are good, and a lot I really like after him, tons of upside. So I totally get it. But I do believe, like, this is one of the few catchers that I think, like you mentioned, the Goodman comp, which is really good. I think we know who Salvi is. Like, if he can hit 240 plus, which he does more often than not, right, you got 25 plus home runs in the bag, it feels like. And that's going to give you all the counting stats, to your point. So, yes, I'm fully on board. The ADP is totally fine. You just got to walk in there going, okay, just know eventually it's going to come to an end. And you just need to be ready for it. Because if it doesn't, it's great, but it could happen.
Yeah, my one concern with Salvador Perez is he's scored 60 runs once in his career, in spite of all these plate appearances. And that was the season he hit 48 home runs. So there was 48 of his runs right there. Less than 60 runs. I really want 60 plus. He's approached it. He's been in the 50s many years. But run scored is an overlooked category often when we're looking at stats. We go straight to home runs and stolen bases. And so that's my one concern with Perez.
Yep, totally fair. Let's go to the guy that should score a lot of runs because he'll be likely hitting in front of Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny P, Salvador Perez, all those guys, because Mikel Garcia should be leading off for the Kansas City Royals. And that's already big in that regard. He scored 81 runs last year, back-to-back seasons with 80 runs, but more importantly, put up 16 home runs last year. There have been some improvements in his swing quality that's been documented. 23 steals, hit 286. I love the kid. And I say kid because he's going to be 26. Like, to you and I, that's a freaking kid. Mikel Garcia, ADP 81. I am a big fan of this profile. obviously depends on your team build, but he can add so much to your squad, especially at third base.
Absolutely. I loved him 2 years ago when we saw flashes at the beginning of the season, and then he really tailed off. Stuck with him last year. I thought that 231 batting average in 2024 was not his true talent, and he showed that, and he bumped it back up to the 286 we had seen throughout the minors and even his first couple of years in the major leagues, hitting 272 and 318. But the thing about him, he got caught stealing 9 times in 32 attempts. I think that can be remedied, because I think he was, when he had 37, he was only caught 4 times in 2024. So I think if he works on that in the offseason and we still get that bump in power, Adam Howe asked me 2 seasons ago if I thought he could be a 15-35 guy. And I said, yes, he's done both, but he hasn't put them together. Yep. And I think it is a possibility, as you said, age 26 season, we're just coming into his prime. If he can do that with the 270 batting average that he's projected for, it's a steal at this point in a draft.
Yep, big fan of it as well. The player I was hinting at earlier that might allow Salvi to DH more and get plenty of at-bats is Carter Jensen, who I think many – he's a buzzy name out there, but I'm surprised when I see his ADP sitting around 213. Like, it's not as buzzy as I expected. The hit tool looks legit, Kevin. It looks really, really good. Question is, can we trust him to get the playing time? What are your thoughts?
I'm worried about the playing time. I'm also, I think he's being overdrafted, Bubba. And I love Carter Jensen, but I think he's being overdrafted. He only had 69 plate appearances, but we pull that up and we see that 300 batting average. He's not going to hit 300 in Major League Baseball. None of the projections have him over 250. And I agree with that, because unless there was just a huge change in his swing when he got to the major league level and got the major league coaching, the strikeout rate's going up. I don't think we see a below 20% strikeout rate like the 17.4% he had. It's been mid-20s throughout his minor league career. That's where he's being projected at. That brings that batting average projected down. The 370-ish, 380 plate appearances, I think that's about right. Salvador Perez is the starting catcher. Yes, he can play first base. Yes, he can DH, but he is the captain of this team and will catch more days than not. Carter Jensen can get some DH at-bats as well, especially if he is performing anywhere near what he did last season. But he's being drafted as the 17th catcher over the last few weeks in these DCs. That's almost a C1. Mm-hmm. I don't even want him as a C2 on a 12-team team, maybe in a 15. He's an amazing draft and hold C3, but I'm not drafting my third catcher in the 15th round. So I probably will not have many, if any, shares of Carter Jensen, unfortunately, because I do think he is going to develop into a great player for Kansas City, but both the plate appearances and I'm expecting a pretty big jump in strikeout rate. I can't take him there.
All right. This is good, because I am overly excited about Carter Jensen. I only have one share. I haven't drafted a lot of them because of the price tag.
I am down the road. I'm worried.
That's the thing. That's why I've been asking everybody. I had a talk with James Anderson recently about it. What are your thoughts on if they play him? Because we all agree the skills are great. Mm-hmm. It's like, I guess my thing is, let's just jump ahead to one guy. We'll come back to somebody. Jonathan India is projected to DH. Mm-hmm. Now, Jonathan India coming off a horrific season. I think that's pretty simple. Hit 233, 9 homers, 136 games. Like, it was just nothing burger. Is Jonathan India really a guy that, A, we should even care about in fantasy, but B, that can hold like a potential of Carter Jensen out of the lineup?
I think so. I think Jonathan India will be in the lineup most days. I think we get back to the 350-ish OBP that he's had throughout his career. Not a lot of power. He doesn't need to even hit double-digit home runs to stay in this lineup. If he gets on base, that's what they went and got him for. And if he does that, he's going to be in this lineup at either second base or left field many days, DH other days as they used him last season. So I do think that Jonathan India is in this lineup nearly every day. So that does hurt as well. And that make Jonathan India, where he's being drafted, is an amazing DC pick for me. Second base, third base, outfield eligibility. Might get pushed double-digit home runs. Not a lot of stolen bases. I don't even think he – oh, yeah, he was 0 for 4. He did attempt, and then they shut him down because he was 0 for 4. So he didn't have a stolen base, but he keeps the lineup moving, and that's kind of Kansas City's traditional calling card of the type of players they like in their lineup. So I think Jonathan India is an issue for Carter Jensen getting more plate appearances.
Interesting, interesting. This is why I love having you guys on the show, so this is good. Good to know. Let's talk a guy that I think a lot of people are starting to get on the bounce back train with, and that's Jack Cags, Jack Caglione. I think we know the power is absolutely ridiculous from this guy. The first stint in the bigs did not go well. That's just putting it lightly. At the same time, Kevin, we're talking about an ADP close to 230 for Jack Cags, a guy with that kind of power. You don't find 30 plus home run bats that often, that late in drafts. What are your thoughts on Cags this year?
Love him in this spot. That you mentioned about pick 230, that's outfield number 57 coming off the board. That's a fifth outfielder in fourth at the best, fifth at the worst, and he could be an outfield one. The underlying skills were there last season. You and Ryan kept talking about it. Everybody was talking about it. He is smoking the baseball. He's hitting it right at people. That continued. The struggles continued. I think those couple hundred plate appearances at the major league level really will contribute to this offseason. And I think that we have a 30 home run, 100 RBI bat sitting there, 240-ish batting average, not 157. And when you're getting him at this point as your fourth or fifth outfielder, I was looking at the ADP earlier. There's a guy going right next to him, Adolis Garcia. I'm a huge fan. I like his landing spot in Philadelphia. But there's a lot of guys going ahead of both of them that I would take each of those guys ahead of.
Yeah, that's a great shot on Adolis.
Yeah, so I like both these guys ahead of several of the outfielders going ahead of them. I think I'll have both of these guys on a lot of teams as my fourth and fifth outfielder, and they could both be much better than that.
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I think they're both very good targets at that price tag. Like, much higher ceiling than anybody going around that range.
Exactly.
And actually, you've probably seen the clips. I saw some recent clips of Vinny P talking about how he's been working out with Cags this offseason. And people ask, like, how it's going. He goes, well, it's good from the extent he's getting better. It's bad knowing I'm training my replacement. Like, he just jokes about it. He's always my future replacement. But, yeah, he's basically saying things are good. So he's working with Vinny, and that can't be a bad thing.
How great is Vinny anyway? I'm sure you saw this as well. Him and Brent Rooker, the way they interact on social media, and they're curious, number one. And I love that in players. And when somebody was talking about Vinny getting an extension, he just simply replied, 1.5 WAR corner infielders don't get those. He knows I have to improve to get my extension, and he's working at it. Vinny's just a treasure.
Yeah, he's the best. And him and Brent either have a podcast or the Foul Territory guys. I don't watch them much, but they're former players, and they keep adding more and more shows as former players. Like, give them a 1 hour a week or something. Just let them, like, hang out. Yeah. Even if they want to interview another player, I don't care. It'd be entertaining. It'd be good stuff. All right, let's talk, as Ryan calls him, Mount Massey. Michael Massey, who just couldn't stay on the field at all last year. Like, we've seen glimmers of Massey, but I never get too excited about him. He could be potentially platooning at second, maybe India. Platoons with them there. There's a lot of ways that things could go at second base. Maybe he gets healthy and we see something good from Massey this year. There's a lot of what-ifs, I guess, in that department. Where are you at, Mr. Michael Massey this season, who you want to talk about free in drafts around 645 right now?
Yeah, and that's the thing. We don't have to draft him unless it's a draft and hold. So this is a guy we'll be talking about fairly early in the season, hopefully, if he's performing well. I think ideally the Royals would like for him to play second base if they don't make another move here before spring training. And so the couple of seasons before, when healthy, he was usually productive. And then last season, we think he was healthy, but he wasn't. So I'm really wondering if he wasn't completely healthy. He had the back issues with back spasms and things over the previous couple of seasons. So I am intrigued by Michael Massey. And at this point, we don't have to draft him, but he's definitely someone I will keep an eye on, even in spring training. If he's having a nice spring, I may take a shot on him with my, you know, last pick in a 15-team, 30-round draft at, you know, around pick 440-something, and give it a shot. We could drop him if it doesn't work out, but I think it'll more than likely we'll have to see it in season, and he might, if he's healthy and puts it back together, a popular fab pickup early in the year. But that's the great thing of where he's going. We don't have to draft him unless it's a draft and hold.
That's a good point. We don't have to draft him. It's a name that you did, we did a lot of weeks when the Royals faced a lot of right-handed pitching. Mike Massey came up as a streaming target.
Yes. So, and
that's where he fits in perfectly.
He did just enough to get us to put him in our lineups, and then he'd fall off again. We get him out of our lineup, he'd have a decent week again. It was miserable rostering him last season.
Definitely was. I'm going to group these together and let you run with it wherever you want. The Royals have been accumulating outfielders. They traded for Isaac Collins, who I'm a fan of, but he's also an older, you know, second-year player, is the way I'll say it, because he's a rookie last year. Kyle Isbell, the boring is maybe half-beautiful situation. They picked up Lane Thomas, and if he could ever figure it out again, could be an absolute steal. How are you approaching the outfield when it comes to the Kansas City Royals?
I want to see a little bit in spring. This is a little bit up in the air, even following Kansas City beat reporters and listening to many of the Royals-only podcasts that I do. Kyle Isbell is an amazing defensive center fielder and not horrible at the plate for a Major League Baseball team. He's does nothing for us in fantasy. Doesn't run, even when he does get on base. A little bit of pop once in a while. Not somebody that we typically want. And when you're really in a bind, in a week, you can pick him up off fab, throw him in the lineup because you know he is going to get plate appearances. Isaac Collins, on the other hand, that OBP, once again, if he's going to get on base at the rate he did in a little over 400 plate appearances in Milwaukee last season, the Royals are going to want him in this lineup. So I don't know if they put him in left pretty often with Kyle Isbell in center. That's kind of the way things are shaping up now. And that's what Jason over at Roster Resource has. And I think that's probably what we see to begin with. But if he's going to be in the lineup most days, we know he can run and a little bit of pop. So I like Isaac Collins here for fantasy. Lane Thomas, I really think, is short side platoon. So he will be, again, one of these guys you and Ryan, Adam and I will be talking about on our fab shows throughout the season, because I don't think Lane Thomas is going to be worthy of being rostered all season long. The Royals have a heavy left-handed hitting schedule coming up. We'll have an option there to pick up when we need an outfielder. I really think he's just going to be short side platoon for Lane Thomas, as long as Isaac Collins works out.
Yeah, Thomas has been a really strong bat against left-handed pitching, and the last year and a half or so, right-handed pitching has been a disaster. So platoon checks out with him for sure. All righty, after we've discussed the hitters led by Bobby Witt and company, let's head to the mound where 2 years ago, I think every starter I believe we talked about pitched like 150 plus. Like, they were just monsters. No IL stints. It was crazy. Last year, we got a little bit of a hiccup, which, you know, to do it 2 years in a row would have been insane. So that's expected. But let's start at the top with Cole Reagans, who, one of the best pitchers in baseball, zero denying that. Big time injury last year, came back a couple out length, like 15 innings, over three outings, looked really sharp in those 15 innings, but still didn't get any surgery, nothing done on the shoulder area. I love Cole Reagans. I have him as one of my top 10 pitchers. Like, I'm bullish on Cole Reagans. I understand the injury risk. I'm fully aware. You can tell me I'm a complete moron. I'm used to it. ADP is 50 with Cole Reagans. Where are you at on Cole Reagans?
In all the way. You know, when you look at projections with his, it's he's one of the top strikeout guys, and that's what I want from my SP1. I want strikeouts, and he obviously brings that to the table. He's the 20th pitcher off the board. There's about seven closers going ahead of him, so 13th off the board. Most of the different projection systems, when I run the auction calculator, he comes out anywhere between 5 and 7. You mentioned you had him top 10, so I think he's being underdrafted here. I am ecstatic to get Cole Reagans as my SP1 when his the absolute earliest he's been taken over these last few weeks is the middle of the third round. So I can take hitters in the first couple of rounds. If Cole Reagans is there in the third, absolutely love it. If I do want to go pitching heavy, I typically don't. But if I did and grabbed one of those top pitchers, and he, you know, typically if you do that, most people, then they want to back it up with a second one. If you start, you know, Scooble or Skeens or Crochet and then Reagans, you're going to have such a huge strikeout advantage. And you mentioned those three games back. He only gave up 4 earned runs in 13 innings. He had 21 strikeouts in those 13 innings. And giving up, he faced the Seattle, two of those three games, one versus Seattle, which was the hottest team at baseball at the time, and the other in West Sacramento. He shut them down with 8 strikeouts in 4 1/3. Cole Reagans is healthy, ready to go. The Royals have a lot of pitching depth, so they may not push him to that 170-ish innings that he's projected for. But even at a little less, the strikeouts are just going to be amazing. I'm not paying one bit of attention to that 4.67 ERA he had last season at all. So I love Cole Reagans where he's being picked. There's a few starters being drafted ahead of him that I would take him ahead of.
Yeah, no, I'm a gigantic fan. I'm with you on this one. Like, just to emphasize a little more, I talked in depth with Ryan when we did a starting pitching review, but you mentioned those three starts. Like, he went 9 1/3 in the last two at 5 innings and 4 1/3. That was with a pitch count. Still got there. Got 18 Ks over just those two starts to deal with. You mentioned the 22. And then it's like, okay, that's cool. 2.77 ERA. Oh, it gets better. It's a 1.94 Sierra. So he actually underachieved in that regard.
He looked so good with the eye test as well.
The one I really liked, a near 46% strikeout rate, 37.5% K to walk. Again, small sample. I get it. But the thing that tells me the legitness of this, 21.4% swinging strike. Like, he was just fooling people. And that's what gets me very optimistic. I know I might be crazy, but I'm with you. I just want to throw a little extra onto the Cole Reagans train because – I know it's scary with the shoulder situation, but I'm willing to take the chance. All right, let's go to Michael Waka Waka Waka, who just doesn't stop. 34 years old, continues to just be an innings-eating machine. Ratios are strong, not a lot of strikeouts, but, man, in a 15, he can take you to a lot of happy places if you let him. ADP's 357. Where are we at on Michael Waka?
Yeah, the entire Royals pitching staff I love because of where they're being drafted. Guys like Michael Waka, when you can get him at nearly pick 360, definitely after 350, his minimum is 331. So his average draft position is very close. That's kind of rare to see this tight of a range between a minimum and maximum pick in 15 drafts that late. So this is the spot. You can almost count on where he's going to be available for you. And guys that pitch innings like this and can protect our ratios, the strikeout numbers aren't what we would want, but hopefully we've taken care of that earlier in our draft with our top guys. And he's just such a stable guy to have as part of a pitching staff, especially in a 15-team league.
Yep, 100% agree. Love Waka in those formats. Let's talk Seth Lugo, who was kind of a Michael Waka-esque the year before. This past year, injuries caught up to him. We saw the ratios kind of go back to where they were. We mentioned last year he's an accumulator. He needs the innings. Obviously didn't get him this past year. When you're looking at Lugo, he's got an ADP of 340-ish, so he's going ahead of Michael Waka. I don't know what to do with Seth Lugo. I think the ADP is nice because we know what the ceiling is, but I'm still lost on what to do. So what are your thoughts on Seth Lugo?
I think he's definitely somebody worth taking a shot on here. He could easily do what he did in 2024 or close to it. Maybe not a 109 whip, but I really think with all the pitches that he throws, if the lineup is improved, he's probably not going to have 16 wins either like he had in 2024. But with an improved Royals bottom half of the lineup, like we talked about, he's going to get into double digits, I believe. 11, 12 wins is a good number for a pitcher you're getting at this point in the draft, hence my blue sky tag chasing wins.
Yeah, no, he can definitely help you get the wins, that is for sure. Let's hit up Chris Bubich now, because this is one where he was taking the world by storm. He was a popular name as the season went a draft season went along last year. Then he outdid everyone's expectations. But injuries cut things short. A lat strain, finished 116 innings. He made 20 starts. Ratios were great. Strikeouts were there. Didn't return, but is cleared to begin throwing. His ADP is 223 over the last couple of, like, 3 or 4 weeks. Where are you at on Bubich? Because I have, like, the fact he's throwing is good, but I still don't know what to expect.
Yeah, I have that exact same concern. With it being the lat, it's concerning. And the projections, if you look, Steamer, 155 innings, the bat, 128. Right? That's a big difference. That's 3 to 4 starts right there. And so that is my concern as well. I think I like taking a shot on him now. If he's looking good in spring, his price is going to skyrocket. So that's the issue. And I don't know if I'll be in where he settles in late March after we've seen him a few times in the spring. But so I think the time to take a shot is now. It's late enough where if it doesn't work out, excuse me, they're in a fab league, then you can make some changes. But yeah, I think now's the time to grab a share or two of Chris Bubich, and maybe later if he looks that good in spring, depending on where he settles. But I think this draft price could go way up if he looks good in spring.
It'll go up for sure. I'm with you there. So yeah, do you take the risk now? Otherwise, you're probably not going to enjoy what you got coming your direction. Let's go to Noah Cameron, coming off a really good rookie campaign. He threw 138 innings, sub-3 ERA. Strikeouts were, he needs to accumulate, I would say, for him to be a strikeout benefactor there. But when it comes to Noah Cameron, his ADP is about 255, 260 over the last few weeks. So he's not costing you a pretty penny. Kind of feels like Michael Wacha light, potentially, or similar type profile. Where are you on Noah Cameron? Because he's young, so maybe there's another level, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, I don't know that there's necessarily another level, but the strikeouts did come up a little bit late in the season. He started missing more bats, and Michael Wacha light, I think, is a great way to frame this. I think he'll give you the innings. I mean, late in the season, in September, he was still going seven innings, 6 2/3. So if he's going to do that with the nice ratios and get those innings, so volume his way to some strikeouts and maybe even a little better than that due to what he was doing in the strikeout category late in the year. But I'm still hesitant. All last season, as good as he was, I just kept waiting for it to fall apart because it just doesn't appear like he should have been getting the results he did. And late August, he gave up 6 earned runs against the White Sox. And I thought, okay, here we go. If the White Sox figuring him out, everybody's got him now. And then he came out and gave up 2 earned runs at Philly, 1 against Toronto, 2 at Cleveland. And those were all those 7-inning games that he was performing. So he's one of those guys that's hard to figure out. He has outperformed his projections. But like Michael Wacha, like you said, I think he may be able to continue to do that with his sequencing, his location, and such. So I'm a bit hesitant on really wanting to count on Noah Cameron, but I can see him continuing to do what we saw last season.
Yeah, I'm a fan of what he's doing, especially late in the draft, especially in a 15. Does he have a 12 ceiling? No, but a 15, I think he's very serviceable at that ADP. And we're talking DCs. We're talking DCs. This is good stuff at that point. Like, if you're going for the gusto, sure. But if you're going for just a guy that's you're going to be able to rely on at least 75% of the time, I think this is a guy you can throw out there and see where it goes. So I'm a fan. You mentioned they have some starting pitching depth. Do you want to save that for the prospects, or is there someone else you're thinking of?
No, it's the guys they brought over in season last season. You know, they have Bailey Falter. Not amazing, but in spots as a lefty, there were certain matchups that he was very useful last season in Pittsburgh and Kansas City. And then Kolek and Burgett they got from San Diego. I think both of those, the Royals got one over on San Diego, especially with the San Diego needing pitching now. Yep, these two guys, they come up in a lot of trade talks, but I don't know if the Royals are going to trade away from this pitching depth. They know how lucky they were in 2024 with the health of their starting staff. They found out last season, and they expected it. They knew they wouldn't have the same health they had in 2024, and they found out that what the pitching depth can help, and these guys were all guys that filled in nicely when needed. And I think so. These are all guys that you're going to want to keep on your radar. If there are injuries to the top five starters, I could even see the guy that came over from San Diego. I could see them forcing their way into the starting rotation. Maybe the Royals try to go six man at times to prolong Cole Reagan's season and let him go deeper into games and not pitch so often. So yeah, I think the Royals have this depth, and all they're guys to keep an eye on. We'll be talking about them once again on the Fab shows throughout the season when they're available and coming up with nice matchups. They'll definitely all get spot starts throughout the year.
Yeah, Falter ADP 750 is basically the last round of your draft. Burgert 617, Kolek 595. I remember talking about Kolek late in the season in Fab shows, and I kept getting my co-host rolling his eyes at me. And I'm like,
hey, no, he was great.
It's like 200 runs or less, like every time out there. What else do you want right now? Like the slim pickings in these streets. You want a dollar guy? Here you go. So yeah, he was quite serviceable, to put it lightly. Let's head to the bullpen. We have Carlos Estevez, who people either love him or hate him. And yeah, he might have overachieved with his 2.45 ERA. You know, FIP 3.67, XFIP 4.95. But it's hard to deny he led baseball in saves with 42 saves. I think that's the name of the game at the closing position. Yes. Could he do it again? Probably not. But it was a heck of a season. And right now his ADP is 85, which if you're talking relief pitching inflation, that's actually cheap. So yes. Where are you at on Carlos Estevez?
Yeah, I've taken him as this is my first closer in a couple of spots. The other guy's going ahead of him. More strikeouts, better ERA. Not last season, but I agree with you. He did the 2.45 ERA in 2024 as well. He has 121 innings now of 2.45 ERA. I'm still not counting on that. But he is the guy in Kansas City. And in spite of Matt Quatraro coming over from Tampa, Kansas City has stuck with a closer. And in the game we play, those saves, and more importantly, save opportunities, is the name of the game. So if his ERA goes to 3.5, 3.8, great. Will he get 42 saves? Probably not. Will he have over 30? I definitely believe so.
Yeah, that's the thing, is I think he could have 30 plus, no problem. You just got to, like you said, do you expect the ratios? Do you expect whatever? Probably not, but you're not paying for that compared to other spots. So you want the saves, get the saves, draft other plots accordingly. I think it's safe to say, but I could totally be wrong. If something does happen to Estevez, it's Lucas Irseg's world, who just new father, Lucas Irseg, which is good. Yep. Matt Strom, who they picked up, though, is also sneaky nice. Like, they've really shored up the back of that bullpen. I love Nick Mears. How do you look at the rest of that bullpen? Because there are some nice options. Like, I think last year was pretty much Lucas Irseg was the for sure thing, and I don't know if it's as for sure anymore.
Well, yeah, with Strom being the lefty, I think he would get some ninth inning opportunities, depending on matchups, depending on the lineup they're facing. They may save him for the ninth if there's righties coming up later, or lefties coming up in the ninth. But yeah, Irseg, I think, is the guy. He had a couple of rough outings last season, but he recovered nicely, ended the season with a 2.64 ERA. We saw what he did in 2024. I think I agree. Urseg is probably the guy. Matt Strom would get a few of the opportunities, and maybe once in a while, depending on usage, even John Schreiber or Nick Mears that you mentioned could get in there. So yeah, this is a strength of this team, the back end of this bullpen. And if the Royals make another move or two, I could see them grabbing another less expensive veteran bullpen arm to throw in this mix as well. But when it's saves we're looking for, if you're, you know, speculating late in the draft, it's probably Urseg, because we can use him in our lineups anyway. He's going to have good ratios. He's going to have the strikeouts, so we can get him in our lineup when we don't have a sixth starter we want to use that week. So Urseg, I think, is a nice spec play. Some people think Estevez won't hold this job. I think it's going to, he's got a long leash with what he's done the last two seasons. So it wouldn't be somebody that I am specking on due to performance. It probably takes an injury or a very long period of poor performance. But yeah, Urseg would be the main guy.
Nope. Makes a lot of sense to me. All right, let's talk youth. This is a team that's always seems to be bringing up young guys. Eventually that runs out, or they're just a heck of a franchise. What kind of prospects do we potentially have on the horizon this season?
I don't know if we see many this season. A lot of the Royals' young players are on the team now. Jack Caglione, for example. Bobby Witt just turned in 26, which, by the way, if he's coming into his prime and we haven't seen his prime yet, how crazy would that be? I'm not big fans of some of the youth. Some of the guys in the minors, I can see Cameron Meisner. He was useful in fantasy in Tampa last year. I could see him getting some run. If there are injuries and they need to use that outfield depth, and he would be appealing in some matchups. I'm kind of giving up on Tyler Gentry. We thought he was the next center fielder in Kansas City. He's about to turn 27 years old. And I think now if something would go wrong with Kyle Isbell, or if they just decide they want a better bat in the lineup, they just move Isaac Collins over to center field is what I think would happen. They have some nice catching prospects, but we're just now seeing Carter Jensen. So I don't think we see Blake Mitchell for a while. I am kind of excited about Blake Mitchell as well. On the pitching side, a couple of guys, but they're really young. This would be more for dynasty players. Some of their best pitching prospects are still at A and high A. I like where'd he go? Churio. I'm forgetting his first name. We got Churio down at A ball, and the Max Martin, I think we might see at some point in a couple of seasons, but I don't expect to see many young guys come up for Kansas City. It would be veterans that they have down in the minor leagues for depth. And I'm curious to see, and I'm going to ask you, Bubba. We got Mason Black from the Giants. Do you think a change of scenery may help him out a little bit? He's still just 26.
I can't hurt. Like, the talent was very much there at one point in time. One of the top prospects we had in the pitching world. So it can't hurt. It seemed that he just kind of got broken in the Giants system and need to get out of there. So great flyer on your guys' part. Didn't cost you anything. So I think it's a great move to try. He could come up there. Obviously, he has to get past the Colics, the Burger. It's like there's a line in the way, but he could even come and be a late bullpen arm, like a long inning bullpen arm too. There's talent there. It's just they need to find it. So, all right. Before we get out of here, I got one last question for you. What are your expectations for the 2026 Kansas City Royals?
I expect the bottom half of the lineup to be much better, even just with Isaac Collins and some OBP, a little bit of improvement out of Jonathan India, a lot of improvement out of Jack Caglione. So I think that really helps even the guys up that are being drafted early. I think maybe they get a little better numbers than we're being projected for. I look for mid 80s to upper 80s in wins These days, that is plenty to get you into the postseason, especially if the pitching does stay relatively healthy. And we do have that depth to navigate some bumps in the road there. I do expect Kansas City to be a postseason team. The AL Central, Detroit, did they overperform a little bit last year? I still like Detroit. I like their lineup. They're probably my favorite. Cleveland's like the new St. Louis to me. They just find a way, find a way to do things. So I don't know if I would project them to win the division. I think they'll be right there late in the season with a chance to win the division and definitely make the postseason. That's what I see out of Kansas City.
Yeah, after doing these, I have the Tigers left to record. I've done this year, the fourth of the Centrals. I like the Royals roster the most. Let's put it that way. I like because it's like with Minnesota, the pitching's awesome. Starting pitching's awesome. Bullpen's garbage. Top half of the lineup's good. Cleveland, starting pitching's pretty good. Cade Smith's awesome. Gattis is awesome. Bullpen's not bad. Top half of the lineup's good. The rest of it's garbage. Like it's just kind of there's a trend in the division. And the Royals, at least, it feels like they have more of a complete team compared to anybody else. So we'll see. Time will obviously tell, but I'm with you. I think they should be the favorites for a very good reason. Let's put it that way. And I'm holding on.
I hope you're right.
Yep. All right. That we'll wrap it up there before we head out, my friend. Watch everybody, remind everybody where they can find you, what you got going on.
Yeah, over at pitcherlist.com, On the Wire podcast, a fab baseball podcast. We do discuss other things in the off season. We typically record late in the week in season so that we have the most up-to-date information when the show comes out bright and early on Sunday mornings. I know Ryan has told me for a couple of years it's on Sunday mornings when he's walking the dog before he sits down to in front of his computer to start working on it. And I've heard that for quite a few people over the years. Love it. I can't believe Adam and I have been doing this for 5 years now. It's crazy, amazing. Yeah, crazy. Absolutely crazy, but it's an absolute blast. And I know you and Ryan talk about this fairly often as well. It helps me as a player, right? This conversation with you, I wrote a couple things down and we were talking my Royals. It helps so much and it's an absolute blast and love it so much and can't wait to see you in person again soon.
Yep, sooner than later, hopefully, but we will do it again one of these days. And if not, we'll do it like this. We can stare each other through a camera and talk on a microphone and we'll make it happen. But as always, Appreciate you joining me, man. Can't wait to chat with you again sometime.
Oh, thank you, Bubba.
Everybody, this is Benched with Bubba, episode 810, your 2026 Kansas City Royals season preview. Catch y'all next time.